the shattering mess. A program devoted to those of you who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are counterproductive and flawed beyond hope. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. Normally, we begin this program with a discussion of the news and transition into the Torah, but being that it's Friday, we typically invert the order of our discussion. But today we do not have IQ Arasuli with us. He's, in his words, detoxing from Islam, so that he has an opportunity to be fresh when he returns to and joins us next week. But we do have our regular contributor, Kirk, who is here to continue to discuss the 23rd Psalm and how radically different it is from English translations. Hello, Kirk.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So let's do a little comparison here. The 23rd Psalm, it begins, in terms of most English Bibles, quite differently than what we're reading in the actual Hebrew. Doesn't it say, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want"?
It starts out with Satan's title, yes.
Yeah, the Lord. You know, it's kind of interesting. Don't the Christians hold up their Bibles and say this is the inerrant word of God?
I guess God don't know his name, huh?
Yeah, you know, so how, what would give these people who claim that these are translations of the actual words in the oldest manuscripts, they all say that, what would give them the right to change what's written there? Because the Lord is not a translation of Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, is it?
No, not at all, not even close.
No, and is there any issue with being able to pronounce Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh? Are those four letters, three, one of which is repeated, so three letters, are those three letters different than the, and outside the norm of the Hebrew alphabet, which is comprised of 22 letters?
No, one of them's the most popular letter in there, so we use them over, over, and over, and over again, so that's ridiculous.
Yeah, the Waw is the single most repeated letter in Hebrew. It is a verb, excuse me, it's a vowel, and the He is probably the second most common letter in Hebrew, and the Yod could well be the third. I mean, it's the...
Pretty popular.
They're not just part of the 22 letters, they're the most common letters in the whole Hebrew alphabet.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be a difficult...
So wouldn't you have to make the case for those who would say no one knows how to pronounce the name? Wouldn't you have to make the case that no one knows how to pronounce the three most commonly used letters in Hebrew?
Well, like most things religious, it makes no sense at all. So you have to be just brain dead.
You have to be brain dead to accept that argument, don't you?
Yes.
Completely ignorant, completely irrational, or both?
Mm-hmm. No question.
And Yahweh, and this is not a small mistake, because Yahweh never associates the Lord title or name with himself, does he?
No.
As a matter of fact, in Hosea, when Yahweh is talking about the redemptive act that he was going to perform that would resolve the conflict between he and his people, and then tells us that 2,002 days, which is 2,000 years after he resolves the conflict by fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavua, that 2 days thereafter, that he would return and reconcile his relationship with his chosen people, a divorce that he decreed in the book of Hosea, which means salvation, known as Hosea in English. When he says that he's going to return 2 days later, 2,000 years after he fulfilled those Moed Mikre to enable the covenant, doesn't he say that the thing that he's going to enjoy most, the thing that he can't wait for when he returns, is never having to hear anyone utter
Lord.
The Lord again?
Mm-hmm. And that really frightening verse in Proverbs where those who call me Lord, Lord, you know, or what you...
Oh, that's that's in Matanyah.
Yeah,
Matanyah, in the, I think that's the seventh chapter of Matanyah, for those of you who haven't considered it, the Sermon on the Mount. really the Instruction on the Mount, but known as the Sermon on the Mount, is the entirety of Matanya, the 5th, 6th, and 7th chapters. And, you know, it begins by Yosha affirming the validity of the Torah. And he says, you know, I didn't come to annul it. I came to fulfill it. And there's not a single letter, not a single stroke of a single letter that's going to be annulled so long as the heavens and earth exist. And in that discussion, he tells people that there's going to be a wolf in sheep's clothing. Mm-hmm. That's going to be going to pretend to be one of them. That is going to try to lead them astray and to try to annul the Torah, which is what Paul did and why Christians pay no attention to it. And he went on to say that those who follow this wolf in sheep's clothing, the wolf is the Benjamite, Paul, that those who follow the wolf in sheep's clothing are going to say, you know, Lord, Lord. And he says, you know, those who call me Lord, not one. No one who refers to me as Lord is going to be allowed into heaven.
That should be.
Now, if Yosha said it, don't you think there'd be a few Christians who would pay attention to that? No one. Now, they wrongly translate the Greek. Now, he didn't speak Greek. He spoke Hebrew. And the Greek, even though, is written as no one. It doesn't say that not everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It says no one.
No one. Yeah.
No one.
Yeah.
No one who refers to him as Lord is going to enter heaven. And why do you think that would be? You know, we're fixated here just on the first word. Mm-hmm. In the errant nature of the English translations, because if you're referring to him as Lord, you have just been excluded from heaven. So I think this is rather important. Mm-hmm. Why would Yahweh exclude 100% of those who refer to him as Lord from heaven?
Well, they you know, number one, they don't know his name. They have no relationship to him. That's obvious when you don't even know somebody's name. That's step number one. And when you call somebody by the adversary's title, you show your allegiance where it is. I mean, if you start out with, oh, Lord, lift up my soul, or whatever, and happens, oh, sorry, wrong verse, but oh, Lord, you're my shepherd. Who is your shepherd? Well,
yeah, I think you hinted at it at the beginning of this. You say, you know, if you don't know somebody's name, you don't know them. That's true. And if you're calling somebody by the name of his foremost adversary,
right,
his opposite, then you ain't got a clue. But the most important thing, I think, the reason why there'll be zero people, I mean, beyond the fact that Yahweh is really sensitive about his name, I mean, that's really a big deal to him. Because there's so many false gods. That beyond all of that, if you don't know enough about him to not know that he is the antithesis of a Lord, if you're viewing him as someone who wants to possess, to control, to own, to be worshipped, to be bowed down to, if you view him in any way, shape, or form as a Lord, you haven't a clue who he is or what he's offering. You would have no capacity whatsoever to understand him as the father of the covenant family,
mm-hmm,
if you're referring to him as Lord.
Yeah. Try to use Lord and free will in the same sentence.
Yeah. Try to use Lord and family in the same sentence.
Our family, yeah.
And so I think the reason he says no one who calls me Lord is going to enter the kingdom of heaven is because if you're referring to God as Lord, you have no idea who he is. You have no idea, no concept whatsoever about his role and relationship to the covenant family, nor our relationship with him once we're part of the covenant. So it's a really big deal. So when English translations replaced his name with Lord, they precluded anyone who believes their translations from being saved, from entering heaven.
Oh,
that's a big deal.
Yeah.
As deals go, that's a damn big deal, to use the appropriate term, because damn means to separate, to forsake. That's a really damn big deal. And that's what you've got here. The Lord. Now, if the Lord is your shepherd, you are in really bad shape, because Yahweh correctly ascribed the name and title Baal, the Lord, to Satan, to the adversary. So if the adversary Satan is your shepherd, guess where he's leading you?
He's leading you to separation.
Yeah, absolutely. You've probably been following the news, and Palmyra, the Islamic State, is poised to destroy the great temple to Baal.
I'm just hopeful.
If they only knew. You know, they haven't, by the way. They completely control Palmyra. And you notice they haven't shown any pictures of destroying anything in association with the Temple of Baal. Professional courtesy, I guess.
Right,
you know, Allah saying, hey, no. That's mine. That's mine, man. Don't you be destroying that. That's mine. So this idea, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, that makes it sound like that Dode's cravings are taken care of. But did Dode have a number of wives, more than one wife?
Unfortunately, yeah.
And when he had more than one wife, did he crave another man's wife?
He was a man of great passion.
Let's say that he wanted to be with more rather than fewer women. So he was never satiated in that regard.
No.
Okay. So for us to view Dode as a man who did not want would be stupid, wouldn't it?
That wouldn't apply to him, really. No.
No, it wouldn't. It just does not apply.
No.
And by the way, why would you want to get to a position where you didn't want anything?
Well, that's...
I want a lot of things.
Yeah. I want to know some more.
Yeah, I want to know more.
See some more.
You know, there's a lot of things that I would like, and you know, I want in eternity, I want to be entertained. You know, in eternity, I want to know more. I want to go to more places. I want to see more things. I mean, I could list the I wants for all day.
Yeah.
And I do. I want to know Yahweh better. I want to know the covenant family better. And there's some earthly things that I want before we take that ultimate ride.
Sure.
Why would you not want to want? This is my friend Kirk. The Lord misidentifies the shepherd.
Uh-huh.
And, by the way, you know, just think of the concept of shepherd and Lord.
Uh-huh. And
you know, do the sheep bow down to their shepherd?
No.
You ever seen a lamb bow down to the shepherd?
No. And I've seen a lot of sheep. We're up in Australia.
Do sheep worship their shepherd?
They don't worship him either.
Does the shepherd sit there in a big comfy chair with somebody fanning him and with if you're a shepherd, are you typically the king? How often have you seen landowners that are also shepherds?
Oh no, not at all.
No, in fact, lords will hire serfs to perform the menial task of being a shepherd for their flocks of sheep, correct?
Yeah. You know, I did a painting that's in my living room for Terry, and it's this woman who is not real pretty, and it's got all the goats, and she's a herdswoman, and I've always wanted to go back and change it and make her pretty. And Terry said, you know, if she was real gorgeous, she probably wouldn't be out there all day in the hot sun with the goats. It's not the job
right.
That you're chosen because you're the best or the best looking or the richest or the, you know, kings don't, lords don't
right.
Hang out there with the sheep or the goats.
Oh, no. You don't find rocket scientists?
No.
You don't find... the best and the brightest very seldom choose shepherding
mm-hmm.
as a career path.
No.
No, it's there is no time in history where being a shepherd was considered a premier position, is there?
No.
Lords, you know, lords own countries. Lords run religious institutions. Lords have large land holdings. Lords are in mansions and have lots of servants.
They delegate.
Lords have slaves. I mean, a lord and a shepherd are antithesis of one another.
I would think so.
So here you begin this with just the mind-numbing stupidity of the Lord is my shepherd. If he's your Lord, he sure as hell ain't your shepherd. And if he's your shepherd, he can't be your Lord.
No, that would not be the term you'd use.
Do you think there's any Christian out there that's ever bothered to,
think? You know, Terry said something interesting the other day in the context of this psalm we're uh-huh. doing. And she said, you know, the tragedy is this is a Christian thing that is a verse that is used mostly when you die. Right. At the funeral thing, and so it's the last thing
yeah.
to say is Lord, as my shepherd, so I'm tagging you once again with this association, and then they all
right.
come together, and it's what
right.
a horrible,
but what a horrible thing, because what rather than saying I shall not want, which is absurd. I mean, if you don't want, then you're not living anymore. What is the purpose of living? If you don't want to achieve something, to learn something, to gain something, to enjoy something, if you don't want, you might as well be dead.
Yeah.
I guess if you're dead, you no longer want. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But so long as you're alive, you want.
What a odd thing when you think about it hard. That's the trouble. We don't think
right.
about it hard, do we?
Yeah, we just very seldom. That's the whole problem with religion. It dumbs people down so they no longer think, because you've got... In one sentence, you've got a misnomer, a concept that is completely invalid as Lord and Shepherd, completely impossible relationship. One cannot ever be the other. And then you have a person no longer wanting, which means there's no reason to live.
That's pretty real, yeah.
And what's amazing is it's used at Christian funerals, and what it actually says is, Yahweh is my shepherd. I shall never be diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And diminished, you know, that's the thing that Christians don't understand.
Yeah.
That if you're not involved in the covenant, your death is the end of it. Your soul will be diminished to nothingness. You just cease to exist. And what Dode is saying here is, because Yahweh is my shepherd, I am never going to die. I am never going to have my soul diminished.
No. I'm going to increase.
Yeah. Yeah, then he describes what he's going to experience in eternity. Things that he never experienced in his own life. What he says next is the antithesis of what he experienced in his own life. As a shepherd and as a king. As a boy trembling in fear and as a man distracted by all sorts of desires. None of this applies to his earthly life. It all applies to what we're going to enjoy in the hereafter. We'll be back. Okay, so we go from utter stupidity. The Lord is my shepherd. That's impossible. If he's your shepherd, he cannot be your Lord. If he's your Lord, he cannot be your shepherd. And Lord is the title and name of the adversary. And the actual Hebrew reads, Yahweh is my shepherd. So that's not a very good start. And then it says, I shall not want, which means if you're to the point where you're not wanting anything, you're dead.
Pretty much.
That's the only way you could be.
Definition.
Yeah, you're either dead or you have no desires whatsoever. And would you ever want to be around somebody who doesn't want anything?
No, you just sit them in the corner and give them a blanket and some soup. And
well, they don't want anything. You can't give them the blanket and the soup. They don't want it.
I've been called dull a few times, but that goes beyond my ability.
Yeah, man. Then he says, he makes me lie down. That's almost like forces me.
Yeah,
right?
Man.
He forces me. He compels me. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Do you ever lay down on the grass?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of bugs.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I spent a very long time since I've laid down the grass. If I even walk through the grass on my farm, and we have roads on the farm, but if I choose to go off-road and I walk with my wife and dog off-road, do you know what I come back with? You ever been bitten by chiggers? Yeah, ever been bitten by a chigger?
They're horrible.
God, I hate those things. I mean, a chigger has got to be the closest thing to a demon that exists in the insect world.
It bores into you. It's not like a mosquito bite. It literally bores into you and stays there if you don't get it out.
And stays there, and there's nothing you can do to get rid of these suckers. No. And they itch like it's 10 times the itch of a mosquito bite.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasts for 100 times longer.
Of course, the Chamber of Commerce from Virginia just will be calling you later.
Oh, there is no way in the world that I'm laying down the grass. Now, can you imagine? And our grass is filled with chiggers because we have deer and foxes and coyotes and raccoons and groundhogs and rabbits, and the chigger is waiting for them and is carried by them. If you were in a pasture with sheep, there would be chiggers everywhere. I mean, Oh, man.
Yeah.
The last thing you're going to want to do is lay down in the grass.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to go barefoot either.
You don't want to go barefoot, and you do not want to lie down. In fact, lying down in the grass surrounded by sheep wouldn't be any fun.
No.
I mean, does sheep have a special restroom place?
No.
Don't. Isn't one of the problems of sheep is they clip the grass to the point where often if it doesn't, you don't get constant rain, it's going to die. That's why cattlemen hate sheep herders.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Forces me to lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside quiet waters. You sometime in your life probably gone on a camping trip.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to drink water, are you going to drink running water or still water?
Running water is preferable.
Almost 100% of the time.
Yeah, still water gets a little stagnant, and then you and bugs.
Right. And if you were in a place where you know there's a lot of open pasture land and
animals, mm-hmm.
and there was still water, wouldn't you be almost guaranteed of getting Giardia?
Parasites. Oh, yeah. Parasites.
Okay. Yeah. With running water, you've got at least a fair chance. It's prettier and it's fresher.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got here statements that make no sense coming from a shepherd. The last thing that shepherd's going to do is lie down. Why would you lie down as a shepherd?
He knows better. Wait, number one, you'd be
yeah.
the job.
Yeah. Do you find the sheep lying down even? Or do you see the sheep constantly walking about?
Well, they're used.
Even the sheep know better than to not lie down.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what it actually says. First of all, it says that in an abode, the Nawa is more than a pasture. It's a residence. It's a habitation and home. Uh-huh. It's from Na'a, as we've talked about before, which means befittingly beautiful.
Yes, beautiful place.
So, and a befittingly beautiful residence.
And place of comfort.
And then it's... Right, and this dashay, which was translated green, dashay, first of all, is not the Hebrew word for the color green. Dashay means to flourish, to thrive, to sprout new life, to shoot forth. And, you know, it speaks of being prepared for a feast. It talks about being given the provisions that are the best, the choicest, the most nourishing, the most delightful provisions that facilitate vigorous growth, abundant prosperity, health and freedom, complete satisfaction. That's the concept of this word, dashe.
Mm-hmm.
And so In a beautiful abode, befittingly beautiful abode, that is conducive to sprouting out and shooting forth, to being wholly and completely a prosperous, abundant life, new life, new growth, he enables me to stretch out and recline appropriately sheltered after exerting myself. This verb that they translated, he makes me, is Rabas. Rabas is actually says, is the meaning of it is stretch out and recline after appropriately, and being appropriately sheltered after exerting oneself. So makes me lie down is really from this Rabas, which is a term that says, you know, after tremendous exertion of energy, after a long walk of discovery, then I can sit down and stretch out. Yeah, very different concept. And it was written in the hyphal stem. Now, the hyphal stem does have this connotation of the subject, who is Yahweh, enabling the object to actually be a secondary subject. It's a powerful concept. It's not just that the subject enables the object to enjoy the benefits of the verb, which means enables would be a much better term than makes. But in a hyphal stem, the object becomes a secondary subject. Do you see where that's going from a relational point of view? If God causes you to be a secondary subject, he's enabling you to be a secondary subject in this action, then you are like him.
Yes.
What it says is that yes, he's enabling you to relax after being active, but it also says that he's going to relax after being active, and you're going to be like him, and both of you are going to relax after being active. That's what the hyphal conveys. That's a little better perspective, I think, than makes, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. In other words, it's just action. On the object, absolutely.
But from a lord makes his serfs perform, right? Makes his subjects bow down.
All right.
So from a lord point of view, makes bowing down, lying down, groveling at his feet, that's what a lord would do. But a father would engage with their children and would help enable their children to rest and reflect after being with them on a long journey of discovery and the hopes of the children becoming as capable as the father.
Boy, you know what you've done in the last 4 months? You've absolutely...
No, what?
Well, you've destroyed John 3:16 for the Christians. You've wiped out the Aaronic, which is their salvation prayer.
It is.
The Aaronic blessing that all the pastors use on Sunday in their clothes. And now you're destroying
that's true.
Now you're destroying their favorite psalm.
Yeah. Wow. And, of course, the whole context of this is we destroyed half of the Christian New Testament.
Because
we're in the midst of questioning Paul, all of Paul's writings and half the Christian New Testament.
That's all the rest of the nails in the coffin there. But I mean, justice.
And also we've reinforced what in this period of time what Yosha said about the Torah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so radically different context to such words. The words are not that difficult to. I may not be able to draw out anywhere close to what you draw out, but I can certainly. I'm certainly gotten close just by. Just by a few lexicons, I mean, of understanding and verifying what you've said. I mean, my gosh, this is so radically different from everything.
It is radically different, but it is irrefutable.
Yeah.
The deeper you look, the closer you look, the more logical and rational you are, the more closely you align your perspective and thinking to the words that were actually written and to the meaning of those words, and to the moods and the stems and the conjunctions conveyed in those words, the more precise you are, the more complete you are, the more, the closer you are to the actual meaning of the text, the more different you're going to be than religion.
Yeah, this is not just tearing something down saying you guys are wrong. This is replacing it with what Yahweh actually said, which is infinitely more wonderful, more lovely to examine or to want. I mean, if I had to want something, this would be what I would want, and I do. You know, this is just
yes.
This is not just replacing my little religion with your religion. I mean, this is what God said is the offer versus what all
exactly.
religions offer you. I mean, well, this is so.
Yeah. When you're a Christian and you recognize you've been confronted with what we've been sharing, that the religion of Christianity is a complete hoax, that it has no value whatsoever, that it is nothing but false hope based on a pile of lies, that it's the antithesis of what God actually says it wants. When you hear that for the first time, you think, what am I going? I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to lose my loved ones. I'm going to be separated from my family. I'm going to be called a nut. Everything that, you know, I've clung to now is being torn asunder. And it comes across as a very threatening, very vulnerable position until you come to grips with what you've just said.
Yeah.
That you're replacing something that is absolutely worthless, no matter how much it might be valued by the believer. You're taking from them something that is not only worthless, but actually counterproductive. You're removing this counterproductive lie from them, and you're replacing it with absolute, irrefutable truth that is profoundly superior in every way, one of which is that it's actually true,
yeah.
that it's actually reliable, that it's dependable, and that its end result is hugely superior. So in an abode conducive to growing, to sprouting out and shooting forth, he enables me to stretch out and recline appropriately sheltered after exerting myself above the Almighty's waters. Calm and composed, he leads me to the light. So that rather than waters being still, Dode is expressing the fact that he is calm and composed. Oh. You know, this is this juxtaposition of these verbs, which are, you've been brought back into a beautiful home, but you've been brought back in after you've gone on a voyage of discovery, after you've exerted yourself, and now you're able to rest and reflect based upon what you have and share what you have seen. And then to explain that phenomenon, he says that he leads me to the light, and he does so calm and composed. It, you know, that much energy, you don't want to be frantic. You know, as I say, I'm a pilot. I sold my last airplane, looking to buy a new airplane, and I'm trying to decide, you know, can I be disciplined enough, calm and composed enough to own another jet? Do I go to a turboprop? You know, what is my calm and composed, prepared ability. And, you know, flying a jet, you know, you're flying at over 400 miles an hour. That's zipping along. You know, you're pretty high. You can be at 41,000 feet. That's pretty high. It hurt if you fell from 41,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hurts if you stop instantly at 400 miles an hour. But, you know, if you're really calm and composed after being that and being that energetic, you know, you can accomplish a lot in a very small amount of time. So here in eternity, we're going to be as fast as light. And I can tell you, light moves a lot faster than 400 miles an hour. And we can climb as high as the furthest end of the universe. And that's a lot higher than 41,000 feet.
Yeah, and in fractions of seconds.
Yeah, so aren't you pleased that you're going to be calm and composed? You know why you're going to be calm and composed doing those extraordinary things?
Because he's with us.
That's right. He's your shepherd. He's leading us on this voyage. I went on a camping trip one time with my eldest son in the Glacier National Park, which is my favorite of the national parks. And we had I'm a photographer. I really love digital photography. And our tour guide here, our leader, was an expert in digital photography and an expert in that particular park. And what he would do is each day we would have an agenda. And some days we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning because he knew that the sunrise over a particular body of water from a particular vantage point would create just a mesmerizing view. And sometimes we'd go out at night at a certain time to time the moon rise above a waterfall. And you know, he knew exactly how to take us there, how long it would take to get there, what, how we should set up our camera to capture this in the most magnificent possible way. I view this exactly the same way. We're gonna, and I know I didn't have to fret. I didn't have to worry I was going to walk off a cliff. I didn't have to worry that I was going to miss it. I didn't have to hurry. I was calm and composed because I had a great leader.
Yeah, you got nowhere to stand.
Yeah, I think that's what's being conveyed here. Mm-hmm. He leads us to the light. Who's the light?
The light is Yahweh.
Yeah. And he leads us the same thing that he told Abraham. He took Abraham to the light of the stars so that Abraham would know what he's inheriting. He leads us to the light.
Yeah,
wow, that's different between he makes me lie down in green grass and he leads me to still waters.
Yeah. Well, in all fairness, the metaphors were written at a time, you know, for people who could associate in those kind of terms. But the understanding should be obviously a heck of a lot deeper than a great watering hole. I mean, I don't think they would have seen these words that way either, though. I mean, I think they would have seen.
I don't think so either. When you look at the way these words were written, I don't think so either. We have Jason Kirk on the line who led us to, I think, some powerful observations as it relates to the Olivet Discourse and pointing out that those who call him the Christ are false witnesses. Hello, Jason. We just have the music here. I'm sorry. What we'll do here is on the top of the next hour, we'll entertain your point of view, your question, and we're going to end up today devoting all 2 hours to the Torah and to understanding Yahweh. So, Jason, if you could stay with us after the break,
sure.
We'll entertain your question or comment.